Grizzly One.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WAPC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Southern man, when will you pay them back? I heard screaming and old winds cracking. How long?
8 minutes after the hour of 5, we are a week from the anniversary of the Torchlight Parade on the campus of the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, that then led to the riot the next day in the park where the Robert E. Lee statue was. And then hours later, the crazy 20-year-old from Ohio and his Dodge Challenger, you know, imitating Dukes of Hazzard, crashes into the counter-demonstrators, kills one, injures so many others. And then the president just throws gasoline on the fire with his statements on that day, to be followed by those on Monday, to be then followed a third time by those that went back to the statements he made on Saturday. And oh, the mishigash that has followed. As you heard from Ken Duffy, there is more interest in the fights that may take place tomorrow than the upcoming Mayweather-McGregor battle at the end of August in Las Vegas. Between Black Lives Matter and the anti-fascists who have said they are going to clobber the alt-right in Boston, where they're expected to speak on the Boston Common, and down in Durham, where there's another battle over whether a Confederate statue should be removed or not. On that note, Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey has said he wants to suggest legislation in the Senate that would remove three of the Confederate icons from the Capitol building itself, and the battles continue. And then there is what is happening here in New York, what is happening in New Jersey, what is happening in Pennsylvania here on the Drive Home at 5. In the state of Pennsylvania, which is sacred ground in Gettysburg, the U.S. Parks Department has said, no, we are not removing the Confederate memorial to the war dead, the tens of thousands who perished there. In New York, in Brooklyn, and Fort Hamilton, the United States military, the U.S. Army, has said, no, we are not removing the signed placards on the base in honor of Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, both of who served there before the Civil War. And it becomes, where will there be removals? Where will there won't? And on the line to discuss it in a more extended way, Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record in New Jersey. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Mike.
My pleasure, Curtis. How are you?
I've had better days. I only wish our president would not have thrown gasoline on the fire, but it's done. He cannot be undone at this moment. More clashes are expected, but I want to look to the Garden State, New Jersey, because in traveling through New Jersey, the most dense state in America in terms of population per square inch, I don't ever remember ever seeing memorials to Confederates or to Confederate war dead. Can you possibly correct me on that?
There actually is a memorial, Curtis, and it took some doing to find it. It is actually an 85-foot obelisk in the very southern part of New Jersey, right on the Delaware River, where 2,436 Confederate soldiers are buried in a mass grave. They were all captured at the Battle of Gettysburg, or most of them were, and then they died in a prison camp that was on an island in the middle of the Delaware River. They died of malnutrition, they died of malaria, they died of typhoid and dysentery. And also buried at this cemetery, it's a federal cemetery, by the way, are the graves of about 130 Union soldiers who were their prison guards, who also died of these diseases. And oddly enough, in a corner of the cemetery are the graves of 13 Nazis, all of whom were captured during World War II, held at a prison camp at Fort Dix, and they died of various causes. So it's a very strange cemetery. But of course, there is this large obelisk, which is a memorial to the Confederate dead.
Now, you know, now that you have publicized this, you have brought it to light as you have in the record, because I was unaware of it. I'm certain that most people in New Jersey were unaware of that.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be someone out there in some way, some manner, who's going to want to see that memorial come down. And what would your feeling be if all of a sudden they had petitioned local government or state government, or in this case, because it's a federal cemetery, the federal government, to take it down because it brings back horrible memories of what it was like when slavery existed in this country and there were men who actually fought to maintain it?
Right. I agree. I think what we have to do when we discuss these things, I have very strong feelings about memorials to Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, for example. I believe those men who were U.S. Army officers, Curtis, they resigned their commissions and joined the enemy to kill U.S. Army soldiers. In my book, that's treason, and I don't think we should have memorials to those guys. In fact, I think Robert E. Lee is lucky he wasn't put on trial for treason by Abraham Lincoln. That said, what we have here in New Jersey is essentially a grave marker. And so I think it's a very different kind of thing. It's not so much a memorial to a Confederate hero. It's a grave marker to soldiers who died in the war for whatever reason. And I think it's possible to honor that without giving credence to the whole slavery issue. I think the argument that these statues to Robert E. Lee and other Confederate so-called heroes like Jefferson Davis, I think there is a strong argument to be made that it's a tacit support of slavery for those monuments or for those statues to stay up. And I believe that one reason why they are being taken down around the country is because more and more people are starting to agree with that.
You know, it's amazing. I didn't think that there was a monument, a statue in honor of the biggest traitor in American history, General Benedict Arnold, who fled towards Canada, left the American Revolutionary Forces to fight against them with the British. And then all of a sudden, I was informed yesterday by my girlfriend, Nancy Riguli, said, no, up in Saratoga Springs, you were just there for the races. There's a statue in his honor for what he did as an American Revolutionary War general. I'm scratching my head, and I'm beginning to, in fact, in the words of the President of the United States, he said, if you take down Robert E. Lee, if you take down Stonewall Jackson, this may follow.
This week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week, and is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Where does it stop, though, Mike Kelly?
I think the line we can draw, Curtis, is that Benedict Arnold was of course a traitor to this country. Before he was a traitor, he was considered to be a brilliant general at the Battle of Saratoga on behalf of the American forces. I think the line that could be drawn here, however, is looking at the Civil War. I mean, obviously George Washington owned slaves, Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, and their stories have been exposed, and I think properly so. But I think in the case of the Civil War, we have a very, very different thing, because what happened in the Civil War is that people in the southern part of the United States went to war against the Union and the Constitution that they endorsed only a few years before, and in fact fought very effectively against the United States, and as a way of trying to preserve slavery. And I think that's a treasonous act in and of itself, and I think it takes treason to a very different level than what we're talking about with some of these other examples. And that's why I think the Civil War really, I think, is really the dividing line over these kinds of things. Yes, we could take statues down to all kinds of people. I mean, Ty Cobb was the baseball player was supposedly a racist. There's a big debate at Princeton University right now over whether to leave Woodrow Wilson's name on a building because of some of his racial beliefs, etc. There's a debate at Fenway Park in Boston about Tom Yawkey, who used to own the Red Sox, of whether or not he was a racist and that sort of thing.
Oh, but you can imagine, based on that era, what it would be like if you just, with one even spread, decide and anyone who had racist tendencies, their memorials or their effigies would have to come down. Anyway, this is a conversation that clearly will continue. But if you are interested in knowing where that memorial is to the Confederate war dead in that prison camp along the Delaware River, just go online and check out Mike Kelly's column of the record.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel found a Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
Another one bites the dust.
Five twenty-five, and the drive home at 5. Earlier this afternoon, information flooded out into the media spectrum that Steve Bannon is no longer welcome in the West Wing of the White House. He's the guy most associated with the alt-right. He's on the outside looking in. This comes on the heels of demands by people such as Congressman Peter King that the president should have kicked him out.
I think it's important for the president to fire Steve Bannon. He should go. I mean, what he said the other day, where he was saying that he hopes the Democrats use race as an issue because that's a winner for Republicans, that to me is exploiting the racial issue that can't be allowed. Also, the fact that he is undercutting the president, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, and the head of the National Security Council on North Korea. To me, his time in the White House should be over.
Now, there are others who had the back of Steve Bannon, like Sam Nunberg, a former political advisor to Donald Trump, who warned just this past Sunday of dire consequences for National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster and Matt Drudge if Bannon were pushed out of the West Wing. On the line joining us right now is Sam. Thanks for jumping on board, Sam. Yes, hello, Sam. Let's see if we can sort of reconnect. Please, board operator, you got to get the disquantificator. Sam is definitely right-wing, a supporter of Steve Bannon, and your disquantificator is facing east towards Montauk, towards the east end of Long Island. We've got to face it west. Now, I understand that's towards Bayonne and the gateway to America, the Atlantic Ocean, but we got to try to reconfigure our disquantificator on the top of the roof here at Two Penn Plaza. Anyway, let's see if we've reconnected with Sam. Are you on board, Sam?
Yes, sir. Curtis, I apologize. And once again, it's always an honor to be on. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. Our disquantificator was just facing in the wrong direction. You're not a liberal, and it was facing east. So we got it facing west. Now, Sam, why did you say that there would be dire consequences for H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor for President Trump, and of all people, Matt Drudge and his website, if Bannon got sacked?
Oh, so it's two separate issues. Let's do a backdrop. On Matt Drudge, he's basically been the Joe Scarborough of the Internet. The minute that Steve was hired, he wanted Steve fired. It shouldn't be lost on anyone, and I know a lot of people hit that website every day. If you've noticed, there hasn't been one Breitbart hyperlink there since Trump swore in. And I believe one of the reasons being is that he is very friendly with Bannon's, one of Bannon's main rivals, which was Jared Kushner. Mm. I know for a fact that he came to the West Wing and he told Trump that it wouldn't matter if you fired Steve for conservative media. And when John Swan of Axios came out with an interview, and the interview said somebody familiar with Trump's thinking said, Steve is not as powerful as you think with conservative media, he was talking about two people, Matt Drudge and Rupert Murdoch. Mm. And as you know, the Wall Street Journal, Kimberly Strassel, Paul Tugo, they've been calling for Bannon to be fired since around March of the of this term.
All right.
And by the way, I just want to get on the record, too. This was a big mistake.
All right. But understood. Yeah. But Sam, when I read the interview that I didn't ever expect Steve Bannon to do with a liberal publication I had never heard of, and he questioned our policy against North Korea, the statements of the president, I think I and everyone else said it's just a matter of days, maybe hours before he gets sacked. I mean, I've never heard of anyone directly in the West Wing so contradict a sitting president.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I wish it hadn't happened. I had spoken to Steve that night. I said, are you okay? And the one thing I'd always advise Steve was, no matter what, make sure they fire you. If they make you issue a letter of resignation, still say, I want to be fired. Because it should come out that the administration, this West Wing, has purged any semblance of a conservative now. You know, Curtis, if Hillary Clinton was smart, and she wasn't, but if she sat there and she said to Trump, well, you have conservatives in your West Wing, who would you hire? And if Trump said, 6 months from now, I'm only going to have Gary Cohn, Jared Kushner, and McMaster, he would have lost. Because he won on the margins in those states. And remember, we Republican voters, at the end of the day, we're not cults of personality. We want deliverables. And we know that personnel is policy. I know Steve can be tough to work with. He's a big, bold personality like Donald Trump. But he fought for principles. When you went into his office in the West Wing, he had it up to the 11 feet. Pledges, policies, and goals. And it was a humongous checklist. And every day there, he was fighting for the agenda that got Donald Trump over the top. Look, the only person that could have won that election is Donald Trump. When Steve took it over on August 15th, they were 16 points down nationally. They were going nowhere. And the election was becoming too much me, 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 not enough we. Not enough about the movement. And Steve hoped honed that message back in for the president.
All right, but many, Sam Numberg, have described Bannon's presence in the West Wing as the presence that Rasputin had in the Tsar's court, that he had that kind of a hold over the president. True or not true?
No, not at all. Nobody can hold the president. Nobody can control this president. Nobody can guide this president. No, you can guide him, excuse me. But the president is his own man. But he should have people around him that have Steve has an instinct to the pulse of the country and the pulse of not only Republicans, working class Democrats, independents, to form this new coalition for the Republican Party, which is the future of the Republican Party. You know, remember, election night, we saw a lot of counties that I couldn't believe in hindsight had gone for Obama against McCain and Romney, and they flipped back to Trump, where they should be, with Republicans. So I don't, and Steve never looked for that. Steve, I think that was actually done. One of the things I warned Steve about when they had this Time magazine cover is, please take this into the president, laugh at it, and tell them you want to, you know, curse out the reporter. Just make sure he doesn't think that you're putting this stuff out.
Well, that was great advice, because I got to tell you, Sam Numberg, having dealt with Rudy Giuliani when Bill Bratton was on the cover and not Rudy, that caused Bill Bratton's immediate pink slip in the middle of the crackdown on crime in New York City at the time. Although it will be very interesting, Ken Duffy, if in fact Steve Bannon goes back to Breitbart and then wages a war on Matt Drudge, two of the most looked at websites in the United States, it'll be a war of attrition.
Website wars.
And conservatives cannot fare well if two of these primetime conservative websites are at war with one another.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Those who practice like you.
Deep into the headlines. Deep into the streets.
This is good.
Deep into your eyeballs.
Disgusting.
Studio View is live right now. WABCRadio.com.
That's Bonnie Tyler here on the Drive Home at 5. You would never have heard her if not for the fact that the total eclipse is coming on Monday. She's actually going to be performing this song when the eclipse hits, and nobody will be working. Because naturally everyone leading up to this is getting anxious, nauseous, and wondering, like in ancient civilizations, is this heralding bad news, bad omens? Or is it heralding a possible eclipse and it's time to pass the ammunition plate because it's rapture time? All right, it's a little extreme there. But on the line right now, Mamta Patel Nagaraja. She is a scientist herself, but participates in the communication division out of NASA headquarters. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Mamta.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so this total eclipse of the sun, explain to me when it will be taking place and what, if any, ramifications are there to Mother Earth?
Sure. So this event will be taking place this coming Monday, August 21st, It'll start in the East Coast approximately 1:30. And basically when the sun comes between the Earth and the sun, it will start to cover the sun. For most of the country, we will see a partial eclipse, including New York City, where the moon will only partially cover the sun. In New York, you've got about a 70% obscuration, so 70% of the sun will be covered. And then there is an area of the country from, it's called the Path of Totality, from Oregon down to South Carolina, where those people will actually be treated to a total solar eclipse for the first time coast to coast in our country since 1918.
Now, Mom, to us looking at this, whether we see the partial or the full eclipse, will this sort of look like the moon and the sun are having sex in the sky?
I'm going to leave that to each of our own imagination. No, it really will look like it'll look like a black dot is going over the sun, and then eventually the sun, if you're in the total path, you'll see a what they call a black sun. And you'll only see the corona, which is the sun's atmosphere, for those people who are in the path of totality. And that corona only becomes visible when the moon completely blocks the sun. Those of us who are not in the total path of the path of totality will see a partial. So we'll see a sun that looks more like a crescent moon.
Now, will any work get done on Monday? Because I got to believe people are just not going to be paying attention to their work site.
I sure hope so, for one reason. It's nature's phenomena. It's our chance to be with nature. We know when the light dims, and in that path, when day turns into night, animals react. They start their nesting routines. Crickets will start to chirp. And then 2.5 minutes later, the sun comes back and it all ends. I mean, it's an incredible time for people to get out. Hopefully they can get away from their desks and they can just look up safely or look down with a pinhole projector at the sidewalks through the leaves, and you're treated to just an incredible display of nature.
All right, but whenever nature acts up or acts differently than normal, generally in our kingdom, our animal kingdom, in which I include humans, the first ones to act out a bit are the animals themselves. I have 3 rescue cats at home, Hercules, a Siamese cat, then there's Apollo, the tuxedo cat, and then there's little Athena, the kitten. Will they be acting strangely in the lead up to the eclipse of the sun?
Likely not. We don't have any documented evidence of that, and certainly not in where you're living, because it's only a 70% partial eclipse, so enough of the sun will be there that you won't really sense a difference in the daylight. In the path of totality, where it actually turns into night, the only thing we know is that the animals begin their nighttime routine. So if a dog or a cat at home has a particular routine they do when they see the nightfall, they may start that routine, but most likely domesticated animals won't really have a reaction.
Now, I noticed from ancient civilizations, from Greeks to Hindus to Mayans to the Chinese, they all prescribe sort of negative attributes to the eclipse of the sun. It was always a negative thing, even possibly leading to the end of the world. Where did that all come about, and have we evolved out of that?
Yeah, I think some myths just go down from word of mouth, and they persist even today. But I think as a civilization, we have definitely evolved thanks to technology. We now understand, and we have for, a couple hundred years, we now understand how the planets move. We understand why eclipses happen. We understand more about it than ancient civilization, let's say 5,000 years ago. When something like this happened, they just didn't really understand it. They didn't have the technology we have today to be able to understand it. So I can see how myths would start about it. Most of those myths and the negativity around it is because of the radiation that the sun emits. And so people were afraid that that radiation, which also is emitted during an eclipse, particularly from the corona, that it would, let's say, I know in Hinduism or in India, one of the ancient myths was if you're pregnant, you can't eat any food that's prepared during a total solar eclipse. And it really stems from radiation. But we know scientifically now that all of that radiation that's emitted won't be able to travel the millions of miles, penetrate through our dense atmosphere and actually cause damage to us.
Now, ma'am,
they didn't know that back then.
Now, ma'am, to Patel Nagaraja, right. My mistake,
correct.
I'm sorry. As you communicate to us from NASA headquarters, NASA has been on the cutting edge of warning us about the coming wave of global warming, climate change that may affect Mother Earth. Will this one event have any impact on that discussion? Because I know there are going to be people out there who somehow try to weave that into the discussion.
Right, and likely not. The time of for the total eclipse, the time of totality is only on the order of a couple minutes. 2 minutes and 40 seconds is the longest, but it doesn't. We don't know that it has any impact, long-term impact, on weather patterns or climate change.
Well, certainly do appreciate that. And I know that there are freaky-deaky people out there who respond when it's winter solstice or summer solstice, and they take all their clothes off and they run through strawberry fields in Central Park and they fornicate and copulate. There are some folks out there who are trying to time their copulation and fornication, their urge to merge to that total moment in the afternoon on Monday when there is the total eclipse of the sun. And then they claim it'll be like bang bang Krakatoa east of Java.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
Sunrise, sunset, swiftly flow the day.
5:53 as we continue on here, the drive home at 5. Maybe raining, pouring soon outside. And reminds me of what it was like 26 years ago tomorrow, which is the 26th anniversary of the Crown Heights riots. And it led just hours later to the death of the Lubavitch scholar Yanko Rosenbaum. Let me take you back to that time because it certainly affected the political climate in our city and I believe led to the election. Thank you, J.C. Hashem of Rudy Giuliani, who gave this city a badly needed colonic and took the reins of power from David Dinkins, who had beaten Rudy the first time around, just barely beaten him. But when the Crown Heights riots took place, a lot of people were unaware of it, not because it wasn't a big news event. It was. But do you remember exactly that same night of August 19th, 1991. The big news story wasn't the riots in Crown Heights. It was that Mikhail Gorbachev, who had brought to us glasnost and perestroika, who had brought down the Iron Curtain, was under house arrest by Russian generals with his wife Raisa in their dacha in the Crimea. And people were wondering, oh my God, is this going to be the return of the Cold War of the old Soviet Union regime? So the whole world was focused on what would transpire there. Very few, if any, people were paying attention to the fact that almost at that very moment, there was a vehicular entourage that had left a cemetery in Queens where the Rebbe of the Lubavitch of faith, Menachem Schneerson, had just visited his wife's grave, as he was to do on a weekly basis. When the entourage came west along President Street, at the corner of Utica and President, one of the vehicles, a station wagon driven by Yosef Leish, jumped the curb and it pinned two young children to the building. One was Gavin Cato and his sister. And immediately a volunteer ambulance responded, a Jewish ambulance, the Hatzola Ambulance Service, and they always respond. It doesn't matter whether you're a Jew or Gentile, and a lot of times they're the first on the scene. But the cops there directed them away from taking Gavin Cato, who was the most in need of emergency care, and told them to take Yosef Leish. The crowd immediately thought, oh, it's like white privilege, right? Jewish privilege. They're taking care of their own. And they started to act up. And then pretty soon, within hours, it was 100, 200, 300, 400 people in the streets, blacks, West Indians, screaming, kill the Jews, kill the Jews. And they began to stream out into the streets. And then all of a sudden, they came across the rabbinical scholar, Yanko Rosenbaum. 20 of them had surrounded him. And they were led by Lemrick Nelson. And he was a black belt. So he was able to fend them off as they surrounded him like jackals and began to attack him. Unfortunately, Lemrick Nelson pulled out a shiv and stabbed him repeatedly. Yanko Rosenbaum was brought to nearby Kings County, and he died of his wounds. And then a heavy rain came in, like almost a squall. And everyone assumed that, okay, everything is chilled out. Well, as daylight came, all of a sudden, the rioters were back out in the streets. And they were screaming, no justice, no peace, death to the Jews, our streets, not your streets. And this went on for days, for 3 days. And David Dinkins, the mayor there, was missing in action. And the person who led many of these demonstrations was Al Slim Shady Sharpton, the fat one. You remember with the velour suit there and the Martin Luther King medallion around his neck and the big fro. He was leading the charge. He was leading it until the very crowd 3 days later turned on the mayor, David Dinkins, outside of a public school. And he had to escape through the back door because they were throwing bottles, bricks at him. And then all of a sudden, the riot was put down. The police commissioner, Lee Brown, was out of town. And I believe it ultimately led, thank God, thank Hashem, to the election of Rudy Giuliani.